Camouflage gear.
Do you remember your first game as a child that you played?
Stalingrad. No. It was a fun game at the beginning, and then, what do I remember, we had a, what was it? It may have even been Chutes and Ladders, but I remember, it might have even just been chess or checkers. Mm-hmm. I'm really trying to think now. This is, do you remember your childhood? Vaguely. There was this big car. I'm trying to think what game it was. I was always fascinated by board games, but they were war games, so I'm trying to think if that was like, it may have been a
so what do you do now with your children? I mean, what type of games do you...
Oh, we play a lot of, there's a lot of computer and, video games. But then you have to kind of watch, because as they get up to Mortal Kombat 10, Why did they disembowel him?
Daddy, why is he taking his entire intestine out?
What appealed to you about this one? Is it the action-adventure?
Yeah, the action, because it's probably... It's an action movie without automatic weapons. There's enough adventure in it without,
That's your first.
Yeah, and probably last, too. I mean,
why?
I don't know. I'm not comfortable with, I mean, with this was fun because it is basically, it's a children's movie. There's enough action, and the adventure is, even though it's frightening, it's not really as violent. I mean, people say, stepping on a car, okay, but not as, brutal as anything else.
Seems to me like there's some useful comparisons, though, between this and Hook.
Just in terms of a child's awareness of being able to relive and to... kind of try and make it right.
And growing up in a kind of a never world.
Yeah, I mean, of growing up in, a never world, a brutal never world, survival. And then coming back, and then your parents are gone, and the idea that you didn't get to connect with them. And then by finishing the game, you go back and you can connect with them. That's what's interesting.
I guess I'm wondering if there isn't some sensibility somewhere that saw you in Hook and saw you in this. Or if it was you that made connections.
I'm wondering if the executives have some sensibility. Did you see a desire to put the small furry boy with the monkeys? Was there some simian cocoa-dependent gorilla trying? I guess they sent it to me. I don't know. I mean, obviously, because I guess I track well with little kids. I mean, I've been doing a movie where all these little kids are around, and they all come up and know Hook or Aladdin. And they seem to enjoy him.
You're very subdued in this one, actually.
It's not as wild because it's not a character who has a lot of chops in terms of... I think when you've been away for that long, you'd almost debate whether he could even speak English, but that was one choice. I said, shouldn't I come back and not speak so well? I said, well, then you'd have to spend half the movie going, baby. No, then it's Nell.
What about
I'm a win in a bay.
But improvisation is part of your...
Yeah, but so you have to kind of take it into more physical. And eventually, as he learns, he can start to speak a little. And I would try things, but he's not hip and aware of anything because he's totally, out of his own element.
We understand on the set that you took Nell to the... McDonald's.
Oh, yeah.
Big quarter pounder. I'm a quarter pounder with cheese.
I would do that for Kristen.
Been a good little one.
But you talked about one of the themes, that the whole thing of no commitment. But it's also, it's like a morality thing, if you should finish what you start. I mean, is that something that you think children will really pick up on?
I think they'll pick up on other things. For them, the issue, the scary things are abandonment and, connection and... critters and going away to some place. That's why that image is more frightening. Just the effect is frightening, but the idea of being, taken to another place is, a very frightening thing. That's why maybe for little kids this may be too scary.
Being bullied.
Hmm?
So have your kids seen this?
No, they haven't seen it. They may try it maybe tonight, but, even, the time they're having the screenings is late for the one. He's 4, and Zelda's 6. She may be all right. 6 is probably the borderline, I would say.
Have you made it for them in part?
Yeah, just like I made Aladdin, just like Hook. I make, if it's something that they can go and have a wonderful time and be, slightly scared but not terrified at, then it's interesting.
It's wonderful that the father can become the icon, the idol that for others it's a stranger.
Yeah, that is that. I mean, it's also the father plays the great white hunter, so it's like, even Freud is going, I never saw that before.
But the film also...
Pistol envy.
The film embodies the theme we were talking before about that there's something greater than us. It's man versus nature. And that, we have to overcome obstacles.
Well, I think that's that whole thing about, it's like the thing about, every kid is probably, their fathers have pumped them up with, it used to be, and now probably now there's a whole new generation of fathers, but, come on, you can deal with it. Just, don't be afraid, and you can,
There's something about acknowledging the fears, and then you can beat them. You know, it's, you know, to say, yeah, you are afraid, but you can do it. It's a little bit with that speech with the kid. I thought, I know you're afraid. I was terrified for a long time, but it's okay. And not just it's okay, you can cry, but just, and then the kid said, it's not about that, it's my tale. You know,
what were your biggest fears or nightmares?
We moved around so much. It was always, it might have been not abandonment as much as just, you know, I don't remember. Obviously, this is something probably I should lie on the table and discuss the memories. Probably just that issue of connection with your parents, of not knowing them, or, you know, abandonment may be one way, but it's kind of more subtle than that, because as an only child, I didn't have any siblings to react off of. So it was, and my father was working his ass off, and my mother in some ways was doing other things too, so it was like this kind of, like those kids, kind of a very fertile world without a sibling. You know?
Are you close to your parents now?
Yeah, my father's dead, so we're not close. But my mother still lives right nearby. And the nice thing is I did get to know my father before he died, which was really extraordinary. Because, you know, that's a bit what the movie's about, too, of, you know, making the connection, and you can come from that. You know, that's beyond the adventure. There's that other stuff kind of subliminally there, or liminally.
Your father was very much like your father in this movie?
He was a bit stern and kind of elegant, but, not as... The wonderful thing about him, he would never force me to do anything. He said, if I wanted to be an actor, fine, great. If you love it, just have an alternate profession, like welding. So he was very, you know, because something had happened early in his life where he had to give up a dream, I think, and he didn't want that to happen with me. So, you know, his father had been very wealthy, and then when his father died, they lost all of that, and he was forced to work in a strip mine in Pennsylvania. So I think... the reality of, you know, having to give up. He wanted to do something, I forget what it was, and he didn't get to pursue that. So when I found something I loved, he saw that, which was great. And that's what makes it nice, you know, of when you can connect on that level with him. He was stern, though. He was a bit like, you know, come on. A bit like this father in the sense of, you know, come on, you can make it. Because he'd had such a tough life. I think it's a father's job to kind of, you know, the mothers are there to go, it's all right. It's all right. And then the dad would go, come on, don't coddle him. Get him out there. Don't breastfeed him, he's 20.
Robin, I was wondering, how much in control are you of your imagination? I talked to someone like Don Sutherland, who told me that he has a screen in his forehead, and people are chopping trees there, and car accidents happen like around the clock. It's like a movie separate from his life.
Wow.
So I thought, well, maybe that's a common thing these days.
At this point you're going, I recommend that he has a separate screen in the corner like those new VCRs.
Split screen.
Yeah, split. What do you have there? I call it schizophrenia. No, it's not. It's different, really. In control of it, yeah. I have the outlet on stage, which is, or as Martin Mull says, a cesspool of consciousness. That I have that release, so maybe I don't have to have the actual, you know, the virtual reality of the other one. That I do have a release when I perform. So there's that kind of, I mean, that's what it's always been, way beyond therapy for me.
What's been your greatest adventure?
God, raising children.
Really?
Yeah, because it demands everything. Because they allow you to time travel, because in some ways you can go back and relive or rework, you know, the ways that you were raised and re-experience it again when you see their sense of wonder at things and sense of fear and, you know, the vulnerabilities of them. And they force you to kind of deal with that.
Is it almost as if you're growing up again?
Then? Well, I mean, you have to. You have to kind of... But you also have to be an adult. I mean, that whole thing of... If you just become a child with them, then you're competing with them, and that's not what it's about.
Are you familiar with Ben Allsburg's work, or were you before this?
I knew project? Jumanji. I knew that book because I'd read that to them. I know that he has other ones. It's weird, the kids, when they read the book, the drawings to them are quite, in some ways, frightening because it's black and white, and because it's shadows, which is like Hook again, but shadows and shading and the kind of the fact he draws from almost like an infant's perspective because it's drawn from the floor looking up a lot. For them, it's quite real, for little kids especially.
That way, furniture becomes almost as bizarre and exotic as a great tree.
Oh, it is, for them, it's because in their mind's imagination, they will, I mean, it's no joke that they, for them, there are things that live under their bed, you know, they don't have to think about it. When you go in the tub and there's a bubble bath, there could be an alligator.
Was Van Allsburg present in any way?
No, I don't know if he, no, I don't think, I never saw him there. If he was present, then he was so present, then I never knew.
Speaking of alligators, what was it like to...
Oh, sorry.
Which films used to terrify you as a kid?
I remember going once to a kid's party, and there was it was a science fiction movie with an alien spaceship and a U.S. submarine had found this alien spaceship, and there was a one-eyed octopus monster. I saw it recently, and it was really funny because the monster was really laughable. It had, like, you know, the bad Gumby arms. But at the time, I got so scared I had to leave, and all the other kids were like, you're a wuss. But it really scared the hell out of me. The Day the Earth Stood Still, that was another science fiction movie, The Robot, and that was quite, you know, when it... You know, popping things.
You had talked a little bit about, you know, your 4-year-old probably not seeing this film, but it's okay for your 6-year-old to be terrified a little or frightened a little bit. I mean, is there something good about kids having nightmares? You know, about something they see?
Not good about it. Not, no, I don't think that having nightmares or causing them to have nightmares is a positive thing. But the fact that they can see something scary and come through it okay may help them to deal with the nightmares. You know, that it's like, you know, passing through it. It's a little bit like talking with a child. Yes, you will be afraid, but you'll be all right. And not to deny it and say that. Yeah, Maurice Sendak
has been quoted as saying that children really should learn to grapple with fears through fairy tales rather than be restrained.
Yeah, if you have, like, you know, if you make, like, Nerf tales, everything is wonderful, and they know the world is not wonderful. I mean, fairy tales were designed originally, I think, to get children used to the idea that, yes, things can eat you, you know, and they're usually agents. But, you know.
Are there any comic book characters you'd still like to play, like Popeye? I mean, people like that.
With somebody else in rubber. Work my way through that. Yeah, there's a lot of wonderful... I mean, I collect comic books, so...
Do you?
I mean, if people say, would you do another action movie? There's a lot of... I mean, having seen all these, there's so many great comic book characters.
Oh, which are closest to your heart, maybe.
God. I don't know, because so many of them are also really violent, so you kind of, you know, well, what would you do? Because I don't know about adding more violence to, you know, in a world pretty much buried by it, but... There's different ones. I mean, I can think of a couple. There's a character called Madman. I mean, these are like obscure comic books. And, you know, as you see them, because there's such a wide range of them, there's ones that have a great sense of humor about them and kind of a dark... Some of them are adult comic books, so it's hard.
Disappointed about the Riddler? I mean, because when we did
it was sad at the time. I mean, I was very excited, and then when it didn't happen... But it's a reality that no one is safe from it. You know, everyone thinks, like, you know, you even talk to stories, like you think someone like Nicholson or, you know, that... You know, you get offered a part, or for some reason I didn't move quick enough or didn't say the right word at the right time, and they moved on. It was like, but I had till Tuesday, you know. But it's like, it's their toy, it's their game, you know, and it hurts, and then you go, yeah, it's the world. You're not...
Talk about the special effects, working with the crocodile. I understand that you actually wanted to do the stunts yourself. I mean,
well, versus, you know, they're the great stuntmen who could do this stuff. But for me, if there's an opportunity maybe for comedy or... Just as the fact of doing it, you know, that's why I did it, because it's a little... Yeah, it is. A little bit of spraying musk. You know?
Was it different?
Yeah, I did it. I did that stunt, but it's a fake alligator. I know. I banged it on the nose once, and the guy inside went, hey!
Come on, damn you! Come on, man!
This is the first time you really dealt with big-time special effects.
No, I've dealt with them...
Well, yeah, Hook... Level.
On this level, yeah, because it is like, you know, it's like taking LSD, because you have to basically hallucinate everything you're seeing. You have to. And now they're going, why? I'll get a letter from Tim.
Well?
That you have to, you know, you're looking at an X or just a focal point, and then you have to track it, and then you have to somehow give it some sort of reality, you know, that, you know, what you're looking at, and hope that what you imagined was close to what they were going to do. Bob Hoskins said after he did Roger Rabbit, he was in the bank one day, and he saw a weasel... On a woman's ear. And he just went, oh, that's it. I'm not fucking doing that again. The truth is, I haven't seen it all. I've only seen, like, probably about 3/4. What surprised me is how the effects, what they can do, and you realize it's just in the infancy in terms of, you know, the one thing they can't do so far, but it's probably next, is people. Because of all the angles and the textures of a human face. But if they can do the monkeys, then they're evolving. No, I haven't. I mean, you know, I know the computer graphics. I know those people. Because I've collected Pixar graphics for years. I mean, I think it's Pixar. Oh, yeah, I mean, with the toy soldiers. I've seen just in the trailers all the stuff they've done. And obviously it's geometric, because as the technology increases, as they can, you know, as they get more stuff, that it will be only a short time before they can punch up my face, give me Brando's voice, and Rob Lowe's body. And then it's virtual reality. And then you know, you can make anything. And that's where, in the end, I guess people have to fight for the rights of who they are. It's like, literally, you have to copyright your name and personality.
It was interesting in the film that the TV store, that you go back to the Wizard of Oz, mm-hmm. and you see the Wizard of Oz. Do kids respond to that the way that, that we did, simply because they have seen all of this very sophisticated computer-generated stuff, that now when they see these movies, you know, that we used to love, do they respond to them?
Well, they still respond the same way, because it's still scary. If you show the Wizard of Oz to a child, even though they've seen Jurassic Park and stuff, they still respond. The monkeys are frightening. The witch is frightening because subliminally they're going, she's that nasty relative. She's Aunt Phyllis.
Yeah. Ah, give Granny a kiss! You know? And this time, watch out for the tongue!
It's like, it's, you know, very, it still works for them. Yeah, my daughter saw The Wizard of Oz and still scares her, and she's seen some pretty sophisticated things. I still think it works because of the story. It's a story in the end. All the effects in the world, you know, if the story doesn't grab them, they'll be just looking at the effects. And even though you can see a kid watching now, if you go to any given theater, and they'll do amazing virtual effects, but they'll still pick them apart if they're not into the story or the character. They'll still go, monster's eyes are not real.
Well, I mean, what the comedy that, you know, we're seeing that you're very sophisticated in a lot of the work you've done. You're some of your predecessors, your contemporaries, and we're seeing that they're calling, quote, the dumbing of America. With a lot of these films, that it's taken it to the lowest common denominator, the stupids, and the this and the that. And what is your assessment of that? Do you think that...
Well, I mean, I think people's need to laugh. Only, and people will laugh at different things. I mean, there's some things where they really want to just go and say, not to have to, you know, worry about a segue or a premise, where they're just going, oh, he hit a wall. Okay, that's good. They're, I think as things get more frightening exterior-wise, people will laugh at, because they revert to that level of saying, "Just I just want to laugh. I don't make me." When you read online, you're going to find people just going, it was hysterical. I mean, when, you know, you're going and people, an extended fart joke, you know, that they're approaching 10 again. But there must be an emotional need for it, you know, because they're laughing. They're having a good time. I don't, you know, go like, how dare you? It's just, you just see that as the world around gets so kind of frenetic and crazed, they go back to a more primal comedy.
The politics now that are starting to intercede where we're seeing comics.
You talking about Bob now? Is it easy? I believe it's a family movie.
How strange love. As an artist, it's got to be frightening that what the politicians want to do to your craft.
You could think about, you know, as the idea of censorship. And in the end, it's like people's choices. I mean, people will, obviously, it bothers people that, well, they're going to see all these things. But because they have a need for it, you're saying try and limit that, or to try, you know, if you put, like, on games, you'll see brutal video games. If you play a game like Doom, it is brutal. I mean, when one of the weapons in Doom is a chainsaw, and you see people sitting there going away, playing away, going, yeah! And even though they're hacking up demons or ghouls, it's still, it's gory. You say, shouldn't they censor that? And you say, well, here's the issue. What are your choices? Can they censor? Can they just say they shouldn't exist? It'll find a way to exist. Yeah, it is frightening in that sense that you see the people are reacting back to trying, we'll put controls on it, you put labels on it. You put labels on it, you can say recommended, just like they put labels on cigarettes. People still smoke. It is, in the end, I believe, a choice for people. You know, you have your own conscience, and that's where what you believe. That's why this is the closest thing I'll ever do to an action, you know, a movie involving either violence or whatever. But I can't mix blowing somebody away and then making a joke about it. I have full clip, Johnny. I can't do that, just for me. I mean, that's my conscious choice. I also don't want to sell shit to people. That was the issue with Disney. I don't choose to sell, you know, either a burger that's only half meat or just to, in the idea of the name of what's all right, it's all part of it. You know, you make choices. And for me, I make a choice to do a certain thing. Other people choose to do those other, you know, those extreme movies.
I am the law.
What is your comic approach, perhaps, Ron?
Wait a second.
Next project.
God knows. I don't know. I have nothing for a while. I've been working straight for probably a year and a half, so I think the next project is just... Yeah, Jack with Francis Coppola. Francis Ford Coppola. Francis Ford Tucker Coppola.
Do you have a comic approach? I mean, something that you keep, or is it constantly shifting and modifying? Or?
Yeah, it's modifying, because I did this movie with Mike Nichols called The Birdcage, and everyone expected I would play the drag part, so I took the other part, which is like, you know, to say the straight part, and going, why use that word? But to play a different type of comedy, yeah, to try different comic gears, not always manic, or to try something, a drier type of comedy is fun, and to see it work on a different level, that's exciting. But back to your issue, I mean, what do you see if you as a journalist, if someone said to you, you know, you shouldn't write about these things, I mean, you in the end have a choice to write or not write about, you know, what you see. Yeah, do I see it, you know, that it could swing one way, that it could go back this way? But it always happens. This country is like a pendulum. It always swings one way, then back. And there'll always be people, just like you said, with comedy. It'll get, you know, like you said, that exists. But then something will come along, and then people go back the other way. It's always in waves.
Some of the dumbest, sickest stuff I've ever seen is in Molière's Cigana Rail comedies.
Yeah, so you, and it also is a comic tradition if it goes back to, you know, even Rome. Yeah, throwback. And then you go, but American Gladiators. But we're not a decadent society. Then no, Turbo will disembowel her.
What haven't you done you would really like to do?
God, in terms of a career move or anything?
Career, movie, stage, anything.
I'd like to go back and do Waiting for Godot again, because it's a great piece.
You did that off Broadway.
Yeah, under Broadway, actually. I would like to do that again.
Would you like to do more serious plays?
I would like to do, yeah, serious with those, whatever, the, yeah, serious plays with four fingers. What does that mean? Somewhat like parentheses or the two bugs. Yeah, I would love to do. I played a part in a very interesting thing that they did a remake of Conrad's The Secret Agent. I played a character called the Professor, who is a chemist who makes bombs for anyone. It was quite interesting to play someone so amoral. You're very freed from that. The idea of being likable is not in his vocabulary. So there's, I can imagine how they, if they try and test this movie. How come everybody dies?
Thank you very much.
That would be to play something more like that again.
Can we just get a few bars of Ethel Merman? There's a kind of hush.
Bring back Mermanheimers. There's a kind of hush. Put it on your answering machine. Hi, I'm not home right. Hello. Ethel sings Madonna like a virgin.
The only moral certainty. Madonna's not a virgin this week on Herald.
Robin, what's
no
your...
No justice, no latte.
Robin, what's your favorite memory from Mark and Mindy, maybe?
Just working with Pam. She was a very sweet lady. And working with Jonathan, those were the two best things. Being there the first time Jonathan Winters showed up and to see these network executives just go, and they were just like, oh, dear God, both of them. It was so funny to see network executives who basically, one guy came up to me one day and said, Robin, you're the funniest man since Jack Carter.
Then I realized we're doomed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a